I'm going to talk to you about basically stair model predictions for let's call it paramagnetic idioms. And stair model famously has two sources of CP violation, well, in any order you can have them, theta QCD, which we see not seen, right? And delta CKM, which is like measured well in K and B system, and we also have kind of a hint on it. Not well, we can't calculate much, but we have effects consistent with that in D system as well. So in neutral mesons,
it is of order 1 radians, right?
What's that?
I remember the number. What is the measurement roughly for delta CKM? It's order 1 radians.
It's a very close to maximal phase. It's pi over 2, right? So, but it's very well. It's very close. Yeah. I mean, near the maximum, right? So, and of course, one of the sort of stumbling blocks, like if you want to probe it further, you have issues with strong interactions in chaos. There is a stair model better. I mean, like calculations have QCD uncertainties and so on. The question is how much of these sources induce electric dipole moments of particles. So, very roughly speaking, if the idioms, if you take a Hamiltonian, it's spin of a particle at rest would typically have a magnetic moment times a magnetic field multiplied by a spin of a particle, right? And then the EDM would be the interaction of electric field with the spin with the new coefficient D. And
there's a question on the Zoom. So Mina is asking how about simulation from the neutrinos?
Yeah, there is a CP violation in the neutrino sector, maybe, right? Delta nu. Which is not seen yet, right? Yeah. Now, it's a bit of a terminological issue as to whether we're going to call that a part of the stair model or not. And in principle, yes, there is that source as well. Very well. And it was just... I'm going to say a couple of words. So the idioms are important because they basically can the experiments can be improved, and they are being improved. And each improvement brings sensitivity to, in some sense, new scales, right? So basically, we have the neutron EDM, so experimental limit is less than. Forgot exactly now, 2 times 10 minus this, I could be a little bit off here, 26 centimeters times charge. And that in itself could probe quark EDMs and various other CPU violating operators, providing so if I have some sort of an idea that this is some sort of CPU violating phase times maybe the mass of a quark divided by lambda squared of some sort, then of new physics, we have a sensitivity to this new physics at a sort of a 10 TeV or so scale, and that's quite important. However, this number in some sense gets stuck at that point because the experiments are very difficult, and they're often dominated by the fact that there aren't that many ultra-cold neutrons that you can create in your statistical error on the account of that is dominating your measurements. So we will see if anything will come through that with this number in 25 years, 3 changed to 2, right? That's what I would say, right? So a progress stalled a little bit, but not for the lack of projects, okay? So so good. Then there are atomic and / molecular EDM. And among those, there are things like mercury 199 that is nuclear spin dependent. And the electrons are all compensated in having no spin. And then there are substances that have uncompensated electron spin, and sort of colloquially referred to usually as electron EDM experiments, which is, I guess, not wrong. And among those, there are experiments with thallium, and that it was improved again 25 years ago. It was at that the constraint was at something like 1.6 times 10 to 27. And that is for the D, an EDM of the electron, the operator that looks like that. But very recently, well, in the last, say, nine years, work with thorium oxide molecules and also other molecules have improved effectively the constraints on this by more than a factor of 100, sort of reaching that level, right? So the question that I would like to answer is given progress with paramagnetic EDMs, what are the stair model predictions for it, right? So this topic was looked in the past, but never answered fully. And we've written two papers on this topic recently. One is one with it's 1912 13, 129, and that's, let me call it like effective. I'll explain what that is. D as a function of theta QCD, and that's with Ritz, Flambaum, and Studnik. And very, very recently, with the Minnesota folks, I had a paper on. So let's get the number if you're interested. 2202. So one was just before the pandemic, and the other one, I hope, just after, right? And this is also effective D out of delta CKM. And that's with my student Gao and Yohei, whom you met here. And he also gave a talk a few months ago. So on a different topic. So that's the two works I'd like to talk about. They are in some sense not glorious, because it's just, you know, calculating a matrix element in the standard model. So calculations of the matrix element. But on the other hand, it's a standard model. So whatever you calculate, if you calculate it correctly, it stays, right? So it's less of a conditional issue. Like, if my model is right, then you know, like trade-offs. Very well. So let me get a little bit into the detail of paramagnetic idioms. Like I said, we need, in general, the mechanisms that extract CP violation from the quark sector, because this is both parameters in the star model are in the quark sector, and transport it somehow to electrons, right? So a convenient point of that in this story is the sort of when you integrate over all the basically hadronic scales, you can imagine that you have an effective Lagrangian that comprises two sources, the electron EDM proper, and that I'll just write. As at a dimension 5 level, this is how the operator looks like. And then in principle, you can also have a dimension 6 and higher operators that are four Fermion operators. And you also look at operators that break CP, right? So this very important thing that I probably didn't mention, the EDMs, the non-existence of non-vanishing of D means that parity odd and T odd effect, which on account of CPT theorem also means CP odd. Okay. So over here, one can kind of guess what you want to also use on the semi-leptonic side. You can have a nucleon, just the presence of it, times electron E gamma 5 operator. And that's typically people traditionally write in terms of the Fermi coupling constant and the CS. So CS and E are the two main Wilson coefficients. So the calculations, therefore, would have to your true calculation when you start from the CPU alloying source and go through that calculation would have to determine what the main source of your observable EDM will gonna be. Is either DE or CS, and in general it's a linear combination, of course, of both, right? So now I'm ready to make a statement that within the standard model, this is by far more important, by many orders of magnitude, like 3, 4, 5 orders of magnitude. So it's really a statement that I'm prepared to make. All right. Now, main motivation to have these effects calculated properly is also to know whether this is at all going to be, in case of theta QCD, if it's going to be competitive with a neutron EDM, right? And in the case of the delta CEM, is like if you look through the most optimistic literature of the experimentalists who throw very aggressive numbers, and you can say, well, is your result going to be still much, much smaller or comparable? In other words, is it in the realm of total impossibility, or in fact with some, you know, incredible advances, it can actually can happen, right? So the EDMs, unlike other precision measurements, right? The most important precision measurement in the world is the stability of the proton. But it is absolutely not possible to improve it by 2 or 3 orders of magnitude just because you are controlled by how many protons you have in your sample, right? So you can go from hyper K to super K, so super K to hyper K, increasing the volume of your water by a factor of 10, which in terms of the amplitude, if everything goes your way, improves it by a factor of 3, and that stop, you will never be able to do better. The EDMs, on the other hand, it's a correlation measurement, right? So you have the background electric field relative to the small magnetic field, and you have a response. You have a CPU alloying source and the electric field, right? So it's in terms of quantum mechanics, it's a second order perturbation theory, if you like. So lots of schemes exist where you play with levels that are close to each other, and therefore there is no theorem that it's, you know, only with increase of the mass of stuff you can achieve progress. So therefore, you know, clever experimental schemes can get you far. That's what we saw with this measurement. Yeah. Okay, so therefore, this is that's my goal. I've spent some time.
Can you explain a few words? What brought the factor of 100 improvement?
Well, it's a completely different measurement. Thallium measurement is the last measurement made with the. With the atomic beams. So these are, I guess, supersonic beams of thallium atoms passing the regions with electric and magnetic field. It's an old Berkeley experiment. When you have an atom going through the magnetic field, you have a kind of a spurious B effects, what they refer to as V cross E, because and if any kind of misalignments lead to the systematic errors, right? So this is like a last thing that they could do, And also you have to crank up the electric field to an enormous value. It's basically an atom, a round object, and so on. This one by itself, right, as a classical electric dipole, classical, not connected to a spin, right? So that one, this classical one, averages to zero according to Kramer's theorem. So in quantum mechanics, so that it's not an issue. But what you can use here is the internal field of the molecule that you can orient with a much smaller electric field, therefore reducing all the systematic effects. And technical break came from this the group in Harvard that learned how to slow down molecules and have them in large numbers, right? So around 10 years ago, they managed to have large samples of this stuff, and with the DeMille scheme of probing CP violation, that's basically this completely different revamped idea, right? Completely different. Very well. And this, people throw at you numbers like, oh, maybe 10 to minus 31, 10 to minus 33, 10 to minus 35. I've seen all these numbers by various groups, including one here at York University, Eric Hassels, and his collaborators from U of T and so on. So you can ask the question. So where do these standard model sources end up on that scale? Okay, very well. So let me get to the first part and then try to calculate for you the CS operator induced by a theta term. We have done also other sources here, but that is, I guess, more interesting. So,
before you move on, what is it before a Saurian? Against other.
What is the reason you prefer?
So we are using
SORM
instead of other elements.
Oh, this one, why they in this particular case used thorium? It's one stable isotope, I guess. This is there is no issue that these are lines. If you don't have isotope, you cannot do the experiment at all isotopes right at the same time, right? So it's for example, it's a one isotope. It's very heavy, right? That's the main thing. So the effects, they're all growth with the Z quite dramatically, right? So it's quite famously that the D of an atom induced by DE it should be zero if in the non-relativistic limit by according to Schiff screening theorem. Right, so that basically what Schiff screening theorem tells you is that you have a point-like particle sitting at with an idiom at the bottom of the electrostatic potential. If you apply an external electric field, the potential shifts, but then the particle migrates to a new position so that an average electric field is a charged particle. It's not accelerating anywhere, right? So the average electric field, including the lab electric field acting on this particle, is zero, right? So this is, but it's violated by various effects. So in particular, in large heavy atoms, it's violated by relativistic corrections, so it's alpha squared d, but there is a gracefully, there is like Z cube standing here, and if you look at it, there is also like a log of Z of some, so it's Z cube log Z parametric enhancement. There's a lot of atomic work done to that effect, right? So that's why initially I think DeMille tried to do lead oxide and it didn't work because it required for what he wanted to do some extremely high temperatures. So he had like a cell where he would have to heat up lead oxide to like 1,000 of Celsius and so on. And that is done in a cold beam, as far as I know. So there is a clear advantage of it.
Right. Like, I was more asking, like, just like, does the element have to have like a even number of electrons, like
well, we can count, right? So there is this I believe would have does it have an even number of electrons?
I think even
that is quite possible. However, it might the measurement might be done in an excited state where the yeah. The overall spin of electrons is not zero. Thorium spin of the nucleus is zero. That helps. And then oxygen probably also spin zero. So very well. So you have definitely spin zero.
Can I also ask any question? So these experiments are measuring spin precession in the end. So the first one already reports spin precession, but why is the second one like physically the same?
No, it's not obvious even the first one because of the screening. Basically, if you have a wave function that is an S state wave function, let me just for simplicity non-relativistic stuff, a spinner times some radial wave function. So if you switch on the one of these sources, either of these sources, what you're going to get, some sort of an admission or admixture of the P wave that will have n sigma chi, where sigma is the spin, n is the direction, and that coefficient here, whatever we're going to call it, beta. It will be either linear in D CS. That would be a mixing between S and P orbitals that both sources induce a very same way. Okay, so you can see how this the second term, right, in non-relativistic approximation, it will be equivalent to the interaction of the gradient of the nuclear density times the electron spin. Okay, so this term is. Yeah.
Can I have a silly question?
Sorry. Let's put it this way. No, it's correct. Yes. So. From the point of view of electron, it's R sigma, like that operator. And together with the electric field, it does create a shift of the, say, spin up or spin down relative to electric field and the precession. But they're both acting the same way, yes.
But the shift seems to be at least different, right, in both cases. It's not the same shift of the energy level or something, I guess, right? So why?
No, it's in both cases it's S and P mixing induced by these operators. including the electron spin. So the statement of the shift theorem is that if you take that direct operator and consider the spin precession due to that, it will be compensated exactly by the back reaction of the electronic shells, and one can show this quantum mechanically very well.
Yeah, but that's per atom, right? Not per molecule. This is a molecule.
Oh, that's for any system that is electrostatic and in equilibrium. Yeah. So.
What is the reason why we consider the proton the n stands for neutron or?
No. It's you're right. It's n stands for a nucleon, so it can be neutrons with one coefficient, proton with slightly different coefficient. That's I just wanted to simplify. Yeah. Yes. There is. Thankfully, there is a large amount of review literature that I'm sure that our own Amalia has studied on this topic. Very good. All right, so let me get to this story with the basically CS of theta, and let me just quote the following intermediate formula. So usually all these results they quote their results in terms of d. So they say d is less than that, right? But in fact, they're always sensitive to a linear combination of this CS and the d, right? They're not sensitive to one coefficient and not to the other, okay? So always. And the one could just for the language reasons introduce the equivalent d, which is going to be d plus 1.5 times 10 to the minus 20 e centimeters times a CS operator, and that number is for thorium oxide. Okay, and that is from atomic theory that takes this S&P mixings and plugs it into molecular orbitals, basically, right? That's what all these calculations do, and they establish this relation. So whatever you limit experimentally, you limit this stuff, right? Now, whenever you calculate, you gotta calculate this and that at the same time and decide which one is winning, right? And if you have one source of CP violation, let's say theta term, or the delta CKM contributes to both, but it turns out that this term is winning numerically by a large margin. Okay. So CS of theta is there is a bit of a story here. There is a number of contributing diagrams, but let me tell you that from the point of view of the atomic electron, this two photon exchange diagram. So what?
May I ask a question about
NMR20?
Is this some G Fermi
type
something?
The G Fermi is already, you see, factored out. That's why it has there. Yeah.
G Fermi is in the 10 to the minus 20, right?
Yes, correct.
So, what is the other scale
like
that comes in there?
What is the other scale here? Well, let's see. Jeez. So. How do I call? Sorry.
Yeah. Is this some like the f pi?
No, no. This is like all from that point on. You know, if you have a CS, we can estimate what the size of the SP mixing is, right? It's all atomic scales from that point on.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, there are some factors of the Z and so on, right? And the Z's and alphas and MEs, I can reproduce that at some point,
sorry, and just also last question. So there's also a dimension 8 over here, which is with two electrons in GG dual with gluons.
There are no gluons here, right? I've already integrated them out. So if there is a gluon, is going to be included into some hadronic stuff, right? So which one do you want? Oh, you want this, right? Two electrons, like this. Right.
Yeah.
So this is what we're going to calculate is going to be very close to that stuff. Okay. So in fact, very close. Yes. In principle, if this is induced from short distances, yes, it will contribute to the CS. Okay.
Okay. It goes into CS. It doesn't.
Yes, it goes into CS. Right. Okay. Well, you can also calculate how does it impact D, right? But it would be more important in the CS for sure, right? Because in fact, we have some other papers that look into something very, very, very similar. Okay. All right. So electrons have all nice interactions, electromagnetic, electroweak, nothing else, right? So to communicate to the spin of an electron we have to use a spin here and no spin here, right, from the nuclear side, right? That's what the CS is. Through one photon, you can show as a theorem that you cannot do it, okay? Because of the vector current here, and if you contract it with something like Q mu, it's zero, it doesn't give you electron bar electrons. So there is a mechanism where you can have two photons, and very similar to what Daniel just said, a blob and a nucleon, right? For example, that the two photons, if one of them is electric, another magnetic, gives you the spin. Now it's a radiative effect, of course. So it turns out that the main effects here, if you just do the naive estimates, are like this. So theta term famously enters in the interaction between the pions and nucleons, and that vortex over here. G bar, let's call it pi and n, is a CP violating vertex, and it has a theta, the mass of a quark, or rather m star, which is for those who is used to do the axiom physics, is a very familiar kind of combination. It's basically a reduced mass of light quarks. There is an f pi coefficient, and there is like order one matrix element here over the quark content, and then it's plus and minus for neutron and proton because these are the isospin conserving interactions. That you can derive that. And this is all derived in the limit where you say the U1 flavor symmetry of the non-net is broken by the instanton effects, blah, blah, blah. But what it means technically is that you decouple the mass of theta prime, right? That's the only reason the theta enters in all the observables. Anyways, this plus or minus for neutrons and protons. So there is basically, if that integral over here is logarithmically divergent, which means that it's actually convenient to cut it like that, look at this block of this diagram and present it as some sort of effective NN times F mu dual interaction. So that's the intermediate CP violating operator that you can write down and calculate, and that is also goes under the name of the CP odd polarizability. So it's basically, in terms of the electric and magnetic field, it's NN bar electric field times the magnetic field. One could do this calculations rather nicely, and but there is a number of various pitfalls on the way. It turns out that there is also in the same limit of eta prime being very, very heavy, there is an eta octet eta contribution, which is heavier than pi zero. So naively, this should not matter, but it's proportional to the number of protons plus the number of neutrons rather than the difference, like it's and the matrix elements is close to the pi and with an opposite sign. So there is like a very unfortunate cancellation. So we've done various NLOs of this with the pion exchange and the magnetic field getting to the spin of a nucleon, and another electric field getting to the charge pion. Yes.
The diagram without the triangle and the pi.
I've written a triangle here just to indicate that that's a coupling of the pi zero to electric and magnetic field, right? So this is a very, very standard coupling, right? You can ask, I mean, like, you don't have to calculate this diagram even, right? In some sense, you can use the pi zero to e decay that is measured, but it's mostly dominated by imaginary parts, the cut, and so there is a small contribution from the real part. But you can just go and calculate that.
You need that because you want the gamma phi, right?
You get the gamma 5 because it's E and B, right? So that's why you get the gamma 5.
And what happens with just the box with the, you know, with the two currents, but just the box without the triangle?
So you're asking very good questions. So what happens if it's like this, right?
Yeah, let's say.
Very good. We have done that part. I didn't think I would go to that. But we've done that quite a bit in some approximation. So if the hadronic part leading order and NLO is really a hadronic calculation, this being a nucleon proton or a neutron inside the nucleus, this requires some nuclear modeling. So what happens is that that diagram can contribute, And if you interact with an EDM of a neutron or a proton and interact with the magnetic moment of a neutron and a proton, right? So it has to be an interaction that is even in the spin, right? Because if it's odd in the spin, it will all average to zero in the spinless nucleus like thorium. So what happens with this diagram is that we could calculate, I could calculate it in the simplest sort of Fermi C model. The important part is the number of neutrons and protons is large, okay? So that provides a coherent enhancement. So the well-Pauli blocked nucleons can be dragged out of the of this Fermi C by this two-photon exchange and brought back down, right? That's how it goes. If the this diagram would be sitting in the end on the states where very close to the top of the Fermi C, then our calculation of this this two-photon exchange would be susceptible to the details of nuclear structure, but since it's sort of all of them contribute, including that in a very inner shells, this similar way, then you would say that this treatment with the kind of a Fermi C, it's okay, right? So the idea that you need to bring that intermediate guy above the Fermi C, otherwise this is all blocked. Okay. Anyways, I'll just write. So if you put together all this, let me just do it for this type of diagram first, right? So you put this all these things together, and you would end up with. I don't know if we've written it properly. Let me find it. Yeah. So. So this G Fermi over 2 CS, that's the coefficient that we calculate, is proportional to 3 alpha over 2 pi logarithm of m, well, I'd say lambda UV, but this is like a hadronic scale. Divided by ME times times this nuclear polarizability, that is that one, and this one is basically if you just want the scaling, it will be this g pi and n bar of theta over f pi's and over m pi squared. Now I might be missing some coefficients, right? So in the end, I can quote like a final result. What we got already substituting all the numbers and all the thetas. So basically, this CS. Coefficient is going to be 0.1 from the leading order calculation, and that's 0.1 because it's there is a near exact calculation of pi and an eta contribution plus 1.0 from NLO plus 1.7 from this d mu, let's say, effect, and that is all multiplied by theta bar of times 10 minus 2 theta bar of the QCD, and then the result is 0.03 theta bar. Okay, that's the thing that we've got. We can discuss as to what the you know, how well we know now this number. I'd say order one, maybe 50%. So we've calculated this series. It's not such a badly convergent series. It's just there is like an accidental cancellation in the first term that it's still an expansion. Oh, it's like normal chiral PT, right? So it's quark pi and mass over 4 pi f pi, right? That's
sorry,
word drop malfunction. Okay.
Can I ask you, the cancellation depends on the isn't that, number of the
yeah, it's a total accident. If the thorium would have had more protons than neutrons, it would not be a cancellation but a doubling. Okay, so it's this.
So you would suggest like using a different element?
No, yeah, because the excess of neutrons over the protons in the heavy atoms is not an accident. It's just like that, right? I mean, very well. So this is the story, and you can ask the question, so what? Let me get to that. So using the existing thorium oxide bounds, right? You derive this way the constraint on the theta bar of QCD to be less than less than 3 times 10 minus 8 various neutron EM gives sort of less than 2 times 10 minus 10. Right. And a very similar constraint comes from a mercury EM. So yes, it's not as good yet as the pure hadronic systems, but given that it's just being improved by 2 orders of magnitude, it could become better. But right, so that's the the story kind of I want you to come out with out of this discussion. So this is the CPU-alating coupling of the pion as 1, not gamma 5 as usual, right? 1, and the gamma 5 comes out from the sort of integrating over the electric and virtual electric and magnetic fields here in this diagram. Yes.
So the cancellation is just between neutrons and protons, or like there's also some cancellation between?
No, it's a cancellation specifically for the neutrons and protons. No, after you sum over neutrons and protons in a given nucleus, right?
So like the contribution from pi like pi 2 and eta is not.
Well, they're counting differently, right? So for the pions, it's an opposite sign, but for the eta, it's the same sign, right? So therefore, one is proportional to n minus p, and the other one is proportional to a, which is equal to n. So one is n minus z, and the other one n plus z, right?
Right. So that's why I was asking, like, so is the eta contribution also like is that like 0.1, like
It includes both, right? Pine.
So
and
which one contributes more?
Pine.
Pine also
contributes more. Yeah, a little bit more. You can see there's a little bit more, right? So, yeah.
And if you check, let's say just a few, the number, the C minus N, N minus Z, that tend to improve the coefficient in front of theta. Like, how much would it change if you consider a different atom? The 0.1, could it become order 1?
No, if you go to the light atom, for example, right, the scaling where I had somewhere z cube alpha squared, it's still there. It's you are going to lose an absolute accuracy of that. That's why everyone uses like ytterbium, you know, the thorium, lead. Mercury, right? That thallium, that this type of substances, right? That's where your close. I mean, like your even the outer electrons have the most pronounced relativistic effects near the nucleus, right? That's the reason. Yeah. Anyways, that's the story for this one, right? And then the delta CKM part, that was a bit of a surprise, right? So I'm just because my time is officially up, I'm just going to say that what we found, we have calculated the CS, right? And what we found is this D equivalent is 1.0. And now we actually have a very good calculation, times 10 to the minus 35 E centimeter, right? And if you, and that's sort of equivalent induced, my main contribution is a CS, right? So, D equivalent due to the D as being estimated not that long ago is actually sort of in that order, right? So it's a huge enhancement that we found. Let me also kind of maybe draw the main diagram that contributes, and I just say why first of all why is it difficult? Well, it's a very high order perturbation in terms of the perturbation theory. So the delta CKM enters in the quark mixing matrix, right? VUD, like VUS, blah, 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 VCS, VCD, da, da, da. But usually, if you just restrict it to a 2x2 corner, then there is no delta CKM because it's going to be a real matrix, no good. So you have to revisit the third generation somewhere, right? So the mixing angles are small, right? So need three generations. Now, if you write something like this, this is never an EDM. And why? Because Vij will be multiplied by Vij star, right? Or any kind of a diagram of that sort, which is explicitly real. So as people know, you would have to go to the sort of a quark level to some sort of wonderful diagrams that involve four weak vertices at the very least. Plus, there is a theorem proven in the early 80s that if you just do that, the result is still zero, because there is a various anti-symmetrizations that kill the result. So you'd put also a gluon somewhere. So this is the state. I mean, like now we are, and all quarks are involved, right? So it's now becoming a very unpleasant calculation, even at the short distance level. So this is done throughout 80s, 90s, etc. Old stuff.
How much of this is just you need interference between two families in order to see CP violation?
Well, you need, I mean, like the best estimates for DN is somewhere at sort of 10 to minus 32. Maybe it's a bit too high, but that level, right? And much of it comes from the J, the imaginary part of this four CKM factors, right? Which is, in terms of the Wolfenstein parameterization, is what? It's A eta lambda 5, A squared eta lambda 5. And that's 3 times 10 minus 5, right? So this thing is also packing some G Fermi squared at the very least, times M charm squared, and then times various loop factors. So the coefficient here, G Fermi squared times M charm, is very, very similar to K-on mixing. But in the K-on mixing, you have a small denominator in some sense, and here you don't, right? So that's the story. But this is what we kind of didn't really pay attention before, and it's important that CS wasn't properly calculated. So I've estimated it some years ago with Ritz, again using this two-photon exchange. But turns out that the main mechanisms that are at play are this. So you have a Z boson interacting, I don't know how to draw it, with a W and a top. And that's DNS quarks are out. And there is an electron line like that. So this is doesn't look like that, but it's called electroweak penguin, right? So the thing to know about the electroweak penguins is that this type of diagram, not vertically but on the side, is inducing the real part of K long to mu mu bar decay. Okay? Also, if it's a BS, then it's inducing the most celebrated decay B sub S to mu plus mu minus, right? So these things are well established, right? Like when I say the Z exchange, gauge invariance also requires a W box, everything, right? So it's 08 or 09, I forgot, one of those operators, 08. Well, one of the electroweak guys, right? So the bottom one is okay. So, but let me just do that first. If I integrate the W and the Z, I get, and that's important. I get the axial vector current of an electron times, now if I really use imaginary parts of the CKM, I get an I out of this. And so I will get I, and then it will be G left gamma mu S left minus S left gamma mu G left. Well, that's a semi-Liptonic operator that comes out of this straight calculation. This is like calculated, I don't know, Inami Lim, like 1980s classic papers, you can, well-known coefficients. So then of course there is like whatever comes from the CKM here, but then the sort of CKM angles, let me write it. But the important part is that you can see, you know, one W propagator, one Z propagator. So naively you'd say, oh, all right, it's G Fermi squared times some hadronic scale squared. But no, right? So this is very famously, the coefficient here is proportional to the G Fermi times Yukawa coupling of the top. So it's basically G Fermi squared times M top squared as a combination that often appears in the loops involving the top quark and non-conserved current such as the Z. So over 16 pi squared. So the coefficient is well known. Now, that's only part of it. I just changed the flavor from D to S. The second part is more or less standard, and that's delta S equals one transition in baryon sector. So for those of you who are young people, that tells you nothing, right? Nobody works on this. Nobody is interested. Who cares, right? But people would die on that hill in the 1980s. This is like the most pressing story, like the decays of sigma plus, 2 pi plus, p plus pi zero and so on. So this is in the family of non-Liptonic decays. There is the connection, turns out, between the neutron and the neutron and the K short particle. Okay, so then this is what I'm trying to say, that this is all going to be some sort of a K short. If before I was drawing a diagram with the pi zero on eta exchange, here you split it and there is like what's called in Mark Weiss's paper, it's called A and B interactions. In some other literature, is well, there's a couple of invariant amplitudes that you can write down, and that they're known because they are one-to-one related to all this wonderful kind of decays that are all measured, the S-wave decays. Okay, so that that whole story, it gives you an estimate inside of the CS inside the standard model, and I'm just going to quote an answer. So we've done this plus a next to leading order in chiral PT. So in
can I ask you the choice of the quarks that you have? So you would like top in the loop with W because of this G suppression, so that you only white.
Yeah. So it's this really, right? G Fermi squared times M top squared. Yes. Yes.
And so out of the sum of the quarks, you pick up the top from the G suppression and the S, so that you have the lightest propagator cut.
Yeah. So we're doing the chiral PT in the sense we're doing a formal expansion and a light quark mass, including the strange quark mass. So this is a leading order in the chiral PT. There are also sub-leading loop diagrams with right. So we need to use a chiral PT to be able to push that further, we've calculated the subleading term is like 30% of the leading term. That's what you like, right? So you add them up and you're done.
A B meson is
multi GV, right? So it's not light. Then if it's a B meson, then anything B, right? Nothing separates B meson from B star or anything like that, right? Anyways, I was just going to called the answer. So in the end, the CS contribution is this JCP, that the one that is well, I'm going to write it again, but it's just the famous one. Then sort of number of neutrons plus 0.7 number of protons over A. That's how we write it. Then 13 as a number, dot, I guess. Then I would put m pi in the brackets, m pi squared, in the brackets, because this is the scale used in this A and B coefficients. It's not an actual theoretical m pi that goes to zero as m up and m down goes to zero. It's just the unit, right? And then f pi m e g Fermi, that's the leading order, over mk squared times alpha electromagnetic over pi sine square theta w times the Nami-Lim function of m top squared, running out of chalk, m top squared over mw squared. That's the answer, and plus we've also done NLO correction, so you can look our paper. That JCP is this famous anything that in the CP violation that comes out of the CKM is proportional to that sort of 3.1 times 10 minus 5 with some 5 or 6 percent uncertainty factor coming of the CDM. Yeah, so if you kind of look at it parametrically, so G Fermi CS, what we calculated is scaling as J, G Fermi cube, M top squared, ME divided by MS times some hadronic scale squared. That's the scaling really of it. Now when you substitute the numbers, you get 5 times 10 minus 16, and it's better to quote it in terms of the effective EDM of the electron, and that's D as 1.0 times 10 to the minus 35. And that's our answer, and this is like 3 orders of magnitude above what I thought it would be. I mean, like previously, because I was always estimating it using this 2-photon exchange, which adds a loop and it adds an alpha. Turns out that the fact that there is gamma mu gamma 5 here, it's like changes everything. So that this is the answer, and if I get back to this table, you know, 10 to minus 30, if they accurate, well, they might find it like tomorrow, right? And then it would be a non-zero value. But if it's still zero, and then the accuracy improves to 10 to minus 31, that's where the paramagnetic EDM becomes as sensitive to a theta term as the neutron EDM, assuming that neutron EDM improve, the improvements doesn't happen, which is maybe unfair. But if it goes all the way down to 10 minus 35, I claim that we have calculated the effect. It's not an estimate, it's actually a calculation. And it's not surprising that a semi-Liptonic operator that you can actually calculate better than anything else. And this is how it always been with the meson physics. The semi-Liptonic operators is something that at least you have some hopes of calculating, and obviously amid subtleties. There's a lot of subtleties here. In particular, how do we know the sign of A and B coefficients? This is people just match it to the decays, right, at the level of chiral PT. But the sign is not known, because when you match it, you match to the decay rates, and it's A squared, B squared are matched, right? So it's all done by like convention. So you have to look under the hood and say, well, A and B come from something like the gluon penguin operators, and in the sort of the factorization limit, then I reproduce like standard signs as A and B. So there are some hadronic subtleties I have not appreciated before. So it's one of my yearly duties of writing something on within the STER model, and so we are very happy because the result turns out to be much larger. I was expecting maybe 10 was 38, so when we got 30-35, and we insist on 1.0 with the 30% accuracy, so of that order. Returning to the 80s, there is a lovely topic, is that this A and B's in the S wave decays of non-hyperonic, non-Liptonic decays, they're described by SU3 ansatz, a flavor SU3, with a 5 to 10% accuracy. When people try to write corrections to these things, the corrections are all like order 30%, and they go in the completely mysterious ways. So there's been like not a complete understanding of that topic, right? So if you are completely distrustful to this effective vertex, I'm using like SU3 relations and relate that vertex to the known decay amplitudes, right? So it's not going to be super different. But if you are completely mistrustful to that, then you should take this as an estimate rather than an exact calculation, which I believe is for us at the 30%.
Are those coefficients B? Is that coming K and N bar? Is it suppressed by something?
This one?
Yeah.
Well, the usual story is that nobody knows why these coefficients are so big. Right, that's if you need a very very short summary of the Cairn delta S equals one transitions and even more so hyperon transitions, it's like, why are these amplitudes so big, right? So in the Cairns they wave hands and they say, well, penguins are enhanced and so on, and that explains maybe 30% of the effect. Here it explains maybe 15% of the effect. So the effect in some sense is ginormous, right? So these are the hadronic issues that are not being addressed by lattice QCD. Nobody knows why, what's happening, right? So. Okay. And it's been so hard that people are abandoned. Okay, so thanks very much.
Thanks, Maxim.
How is DE different in some sense from G minus 2 in the following sense, right? So. It's over here. I'll use the pink because that's the only one.
So that same diagram before you erase it, Kaon, there isn't a variable with a Kaon in two photons. It's super suppressed, right? but that exists. So,
before I was estimating something like a gamma, and then there is like a delta S equals one, delta S equals minus one transition. These are weak transitions, but yes, there could be Kaon as well, that kind of stuff. Yes.
And I'm just saying, and then the gate going to the photons. I'm just going for the EEFF dual operator. Oh, EEFF operator. I mean the E. Yeah, the E. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're going to tell me what the E.
Yeah. So I think we found the leading one. Sorry. The question was. Oh yeah.
The E.
So normally, like. Let me ask you this. Let me calculate a main effect that influences G minus 2, doesn't matter, of electron or a muon, from the hadronic sector, right? So what do I do? Put a gamma, I put the stuff, and the gamma again, right? And I put an external gamma here,
yeah.
And this is a muon, right? And you have this globe, right? So very famous diagram. Now, in the CP-related channel, that doesn't contribute at all, right? And that is because if you cut this diagram, right, it has only one momentum coming in, one coming out, right? So you can write in the CP. Even polarization, you can write g mu q squared minus q mu q nu, right? And everything is good. That's your form of the polarization operator system with gauge invariant. But if it's a CP violating operator, you have to write an epsilon, right? So you have an epsilon mu nu alpha beta, right? And you have only one momentum. So you, in other words, FF dual does not have a perturbative purpose, right? So like this, this is identically zero. So if you would do something like that, you put, oh yeah, I would put yet another gamma. And then attach that gamma over here, and this is roughly what's been done, and that's leading to very, very much suppressed contributions.
Okay.
And then that's actually the case in both cases, in theta PCD and delta CPM, it contributes very little.
Okay.
So, semi-electronic operators win in the standard model, and we have calculated. That's it.